You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
We were talking about a man named Squanto. Although he was a small boy, historians believe the historical accounts of his life vary, but historians believe that around 1608, more than 10 years before the pilgrims arrived, a group of English traders sailed to what is today Plymouth, Massachusetts. They would set off out in the water, take a small boat, and these natives here trusted them. Unfortunately, because these guys had evil thoughts, the Wampanoag Indians came out to trade, and whoever was on the ship got taken into custody. They were slaves. They were made slaves. They were sold in the slavery in Spain. Now, here's the thing. In this unimaginable horror, God was working because he had a plan that only God could pull off, and it really shows you. It was pretty amazing. One of those young boys there was named Squanto, and he was actually bought by a well-meaning Spanish monk. They were known for doing that. They basically rescued them when they were put up for sale. They would buy them and treat them very well. He was treated well and taught him the Christian faith. Imagine that. He was a monk, of course. Squanto eventually made his way to England and worked in the stables of a man named John Slaney. Slaney sympathized with Squanto's desire to return home, and he promised to put him on the first vessel bound for America. Not as easy as it seems, though. It wasn't until 1619, 10 years after he was first kidnapped, that a ship was found. Finally, after a decade of exile and heartbreak, Squanto was on his way back home. But when he arrived in his home, which is now Massachusetts, more heartbreak awaited. There had been an epidemic, apparently wiped out his entire village. They were completely gone. No trace. We can only imagine what must have gone through his mind. Why had God allowed him to return home against all odds, only to find his loved ones weren't there? They were gone, perished. A year later, the answer came. A shipload of English families arrived and settled on the very land once occupied by Squanto's people. He went to meet them, greeting the startled pilgrims in English. I don't know how he dressed. I used to think of him coming in dressed as we picture Native Americans, you know, but by then he might have dressed like an Englishman. He might have looked just like them. I mean, as far as his dress, I have a feeling that they knew he wasn't really one of them. But then when he spoke the Queen's English, they must have been stunned, absolutely stunned. And according to the diary of Pilgrim Governor William Bradford, he, as I quote, became a special instrument sent of God for our good. He showed us how to plant our corn, where to take fish, how to procure other commodities, was also our pilot to bring us to unknown places for our profit, and never left us until the day that he died. When he lay dying of fever, Bradford wrote that their friend desired the governor to pray for him that he might go to the Englishman's God in heaven. He bequeathed his possessions to the pilgrims as remembrances of his love. Who but God could so miraculously convert a lonely Native American Indian and then use him to save a struggling band of Englishmen, reminiscent of the biblical story of Joseph, very much so, who was also sold into slavery and whom God likewise used as a special instrument for good. His life story is remarkable, and we need to make sure that our children learn about it. We are into that season. We had Thanksgiving Thursday, of course. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Some of us had Thanksgiving on Friday as well. It was really pretty awesome. Although Friday, yeah, it's the madness day, you know. But my son went out with his friend. They went to Target. They went to Sam's Club. They went to Best Buy. They went to, oh, Walmart, yes. And they didn't. That they just, you know, it's just kind of like normal. I mean, it was kind of glad. And they surprised us because I didn't know he was going to do that much. Saturday, I guess, is Buy Local Saturday. Today is the madness of Cyber Monday. And then tomorrow is a really cool thing. You may be getting inundated with emails about Giving Tuesday. nonprofit organizations such as ours here at the Sound of Life, say Giving Tuesday. They said, well, you know, we've done everything else. I mean, it's turned into a really big thing, Giving Tuesday. And we'd like to take a moment to reflect on all the things this year, really, we have to be thankful for. I mean, just recently, last week this time, we were doing Hope to the Hungry, and you provided over 14,000 meals. That's 17 days of meals for those who do not have a meal at the Capital City Rescue Mission and Open Door Mission. Great missions. We had a wonderful fall fundraiser, which seems like years ago now, you know, and people are giving for the Monroe Transmitter upgrade. Got a new transmitter going in at that Monroe location there in Orange County. We'll make it awesome to listen to. We can't wait for that. And on this Giving Tuesday coming up tomorrow, you know, we just thought, man, you know, if you want to give a gift to the Sound of Life, we will put it towards the Monroe Transmitter, and we will give 10% of that to Justice for Orphans. They're launching, and you may have heard about this, the Care Portal around the Capital Region right now. But county by county, churches are coming together. When you get so many churches together that work with the government, the county government agency that has to do with fostering children and their families, the churches work for them to provide needs that, say, a county, you know, Albany County, can't provide. They can't, but these churches can come to the rescue. It is an incredible opportunity. And it's called the Care Portal and Justice for Orphans to tell you all about that. But we are, you know, there's a cost involved there. So we decided that anything that you give to the Sound of Life on Giving Tuesday, we will in turn give 10% of that to the Justice for Orphans ministry. And, that Care Portal thing is just a great idea because it gives God an opportunity to work on so many different levels in a county, not only with the government of that county, but with the churches as well, too. So it will be a blessing not only to us and in turn you, but also a blessing to the orphans, which God wants us to remember. Remember, take care of the orphans, right? And the fatherless and the widows. So it's pretty cool. So anyway, that's my Giving Tuesday thing. It's 7:20 and Monday Mug Day is back. Hang on. We've got today in history. What didn't happen? We've got the first Thanksgiving. I know that happened, but maybe something about it's wrong about the, there's a bit of history that I wanted you to know. That I just put in there in Today in History coming up, and you'll find out about that. And a British Prime Minister had something that the first British Prime Minister did, and it wasn't all that long ago. Anyway, I'm rambling. That's on the way, and your opportunity to win the Cup of Joe Morning Show travel mug, complete with the Morning Show custom roast, thanks to Greater Things Roasters in Ravenna.
Here at the Sound of Life, we play a ton of awesome faith-based music. But have you ever wondered about the story behind these songs? Well, here's a glimpse.
Hey guys, it's Zach Williams, and today I'm going to share with you just a little bit about the story behind the song Survivor. This story kind of comes from actually my wife's own personal story. At 14 years old, she survived a fire accident, and I just had this picture in my mind when I was writing part of the course that I pictured God literally pulling her out of this fire and saving her life. And I think for me, just thinking about the stories that I've heard over the last couple of years, we all have a survivor story. Maybe we've not actually been pulled out of a fire like my wife, but we've all been pulled out of something in our life that we're not happy with, or a valley that we've been living in, just surviving. And God has called us to be free. I think when we truly accept what God has in store for us and give our hearts to Him, that's when we truly become survivors.
There are two types of people in the world, and they both love the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
I'm Joe. Welcome to Cup of Joe Morning Show. Where were we last? Oh, yes, the policeman. He's a corporal. Les Munn. He, part of his patrol is the high school football game, and he does that regularly, so they know him there, and he used to go to school there, I believe, but the students dared him to play the drum with the high school band. They knew that he played the drums. The last time he jammed with a high school band was 23 years ago. Actually, he was in a high school in another part of the state. So that's why he wasn't that school, but he was in a high school. They're all the same. Anywhere you go, they're just absolutely amazing. Great qualities. But even then, I mean, his band played a lot of the same songs, he thought, you know, I mean, they really do. So he did it. He wowed them, kids and parents. He didn't miss a beat. In fact, the policeman was such a big hit that the band leader asked him back to perform again next season. That's how you know when you're doing pretty good, when you're playing an instrument pretty well, right? And so when they ask you back. So that's a pretty cool story. After 23 years, got him back to something that he loves. And that's all, nothing wrong with that. That's all.
You're listening to 1990s Christian Music Flashback. Here on the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast.
Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
He's a radio announcer here, isn't he?
The Sound of Life.
Really sorry if you're, you know, like in the North Country, around the Capital Region. I remember those days. I lived around there and going through the slush and all that stuff. But it's good for the Catskills and higher elevations. Anywhere there's snow recreation activities going on. And I say that simply purely because my son works at one of those in the Catskills. And they love it when it's snow. And I feel bad for him, you know, like yesterday with the rain and everything. It's like, wow. So hopefully you can get some chilly air and they can make some snow and it'd be fun. All right. So now we got Thanksgiving in the rearview mirror, as they say. Communities across the state of Maine are starting to kick off the holiday season as well. Downtowns are all aglow with lights and fir trees being set into place, just like around here. But there's one place in Rockland, Maine. And if you're a Mainer, maybe you know about this tradition. The centerpiece of the holiday season is not a run-of-the-mill tree. No, that's not for them. It's a 40-foot-tall man-made tribute, shall we say, to the lobster fishing industry. It's known as the lobster trap tree. Now, there's no doubt about it when you see it. You're like, ooh, that's a lobster trap tree right there. It's made up of over 150 red and green lobster traps. Well, why didn't you say so? It's decked out with 100 lobster buoys, and the tree is fitting in the small coastal city. Of course, it is. I mean, you would expect to see something like that probably. It's very innovative. It's kind of neat. It's home to the Maine Lobster Festival and has been called the, quote, lobster capital of the world, Rockland, Maine. They do something a little bit different. If you want to check out a picture of the tree, at least I'm going to try to post it. I have a little bit of an issue this morning. As always, of course, you know, when is technology never far above my head? But I'll post it somehow, the Rockland, Maine tribute to its lobster fishing heritage.
The Sound of Life.
Found out yesterday, which kind of surprised me, but I guess a lot of people in the business weren't very surprised that Stephen Hillenburg passed away. He is the one who created the TV show SpongeBob SquarePants, which is phenomenally successful. Now, it's been years since I've watched that, and it's amazing how many years it's been on. My boys, of course, coming up, you know, when they were little, watched that show. Here's a kid that was from Lawton, Oklahoma. He wasn't old, but, you know, he went to high school, of course, and then went to Humboldt State University and eventually California Institute of the Arts. And he is an animator and cartoonist and also marine biology teacher. Now you kind of wonder why he had this idea of a cartoon that took place under the sea. I mean, from the theme song to all the characters, just like any situational comedy or any show or movie, you have to have the right writing. You have to have the right script and you have to have the right characters in it. Ever since they did Andy Griffith's show and Mary Tyler Moore and Dick Van Dyke and all, from all those on the way up, the really, really good shows had real characters in them. And this show did. And I'll tell you, back in the day, and you may not be familiar with it, you know, maybe now in the last couple of years is the only thing you know, but when they came out, they had some really good moral teaching in it. It really did. It was really pretty amazing and very funny. And so it's kind of sad because he was a victim of ALS. And he announced it, I guess, not all that long ago. Some people will live a long time after that, very much disabled, which, you know, I mean, man, I've seen people that weren't even able to talk that were still alive that had ALS. He was only 57, Stephen Hillenburg. I don't know why. I've never seen his name, I don't think, on the Media Leader prayer calendar to pray for. But I thought, man, oh, man, are you kidding me? That thing has got to have been a real cultural influencer. At least when it started, it had some really good stuff in it. I guess one of the things is, it's kind of a shame that I only have like one example that I use as a drop for it, which is pretty good. One of my favorite, you know, laughable characters. You know who this is.
Well, what was it? What did he say?
And this man, this is really pretty cool. This guy, been broadcasting for 44 years, man. I'm telling you. Deke Duncan. His wife is the only one that really knows about it, I guess, unless you were passing close enough by his house to pick up the studio. The smallest audience in the country, he said, was his wife, because he didn't have a radio license and he was only able to broadcast through a speaker placed in the living room of the home he shared with his wife, Teresa. But now he has his lifelong wish, his dream of broadcasting to a wider audience is going to come true. And I'm sure he's been auditioned and maybe even taught to speak British English, if that makes any sense. And I'll tell you why I say that in a second. BBC, the BBC British Broadcasting, is having him DJ his very own hour-long show over Christmas, playing music not only for one town, but now for hundreds of thousands of people living around the area. Got that from the Good News Network. Garden Shed DJ plays for his wife now on the BBC. There was a man who broadcast here that was so dearly loved. He had the richest voice on the planet. Very similar to the man that did the Uncola. Remember him? Uncola. And he had the richest voice. They actually knew each other in Trinidad. That's where they were both from. John Batodier grew up in Trinidad. He's British. And he worked in radio. He was an engineer in radio, just to talk about driving through the fields to get to the towers and then do work and stuff. And they would spend the night out there and things like that, you know, because it was so far away. It was very remote and stuff. And he was given the opportunity one time to be on the BBC. Now, you're, of course, you're auditioned. He had to go to England to learn how to, he said, I had to go to England to learn how to talk. And I thought, you'd sound like you talk pretty well. But and I guess when you heard him here on The Sound of Life, it wasn't British at all. It, you know, was a, had a Trinidad, kind of a Trinidad dialect, which is absolutely incredible. One of the richest, most beloved people ever. And so he started there young and came to New York and was in radio and it was an incredible, wonderful believer. And he's not here anymore. He's in heaven. But I remember a lot of things about John. And I remember one time standing there looking out. He had spent the night here and I came in early, kind of surprised to see him. That was kind of rare. But it was bad weather night, you know, icy, bad. And it was kind of sleeting that morning and it was getting light out. We were both standing on the front porch then looking out. And he said, yeah, he said, I haven't done too bad for a guy that grew up living in a country where we never even wore a jacket. I mean, you know, and I thought, yeah, you're right about that, John. It's something else. It's pretty amazing. And he had lived through the cycle of nobody knowing who you were and then people discovering you and then a lot of people wanting to use your voice and then, you know, kind of fading out, if you will. And then he said, pretty soon, nobody knows who you are anymore. He's a really neat guy. But this story about Deke Duncan getting his opportunity on the BBC reminded me, who knows where it will lead. That's a pretty big company and, you know, you never know.
The Sound of Life.
Thanksgiving, you posted, relationships are hard and love isn't always easy, but thank you, Jesus, for showing me how every day is a learning process, trying to be more like him, patient, kind, selfless. Boy, got a long way to go, I think is what he meant to say, but didn't quite finish that sentence. But God's grace is sufficient. He's a very young guy, just been married, he's celebrating his first Thanksgiving, first time hosting Thanksgiving, he wrote. He's got a bazillion Twitter followers, and he is incredibly popular. A lot of people know his name, and I wonder if he will ever not be thought of for being a weirdo, especially now that he has embraced Jesus as a follower of Jesus. But here he was, a pop icon. You didn't really know him. A lot of people thought they knew him. And then you do some weird things, you know, and you know how they are, the paparazzi are always trying to get photographs and video and things of you. Just with people, I mean, man, oh man, it's crazy. And it'll just warp your life. People around you all the time. And of course, I mean, he could probably, in our town, he could probably go in a store in our town and nobody would even think twice about it, probably. I don't know if he knows that or not, but and I don't know where he's living at around Los Angeles, I guess. I'm talking about Justin Bieber. And he has really come out lately making big professions of faith and talking about growing in Jesus. He's a member of Hillsong Church, And, you know, he was what, 15 when he hit fame, which is unfortunate for anybody, really. I mean, the kind of fame that was is just crazy. So I just really pray that his wife, Haley, really, you know, together they will go through this and work it out and be grounded and stuff. And who knows? I mean, God can do anything with anybody. You know, we start pointing fingers at people and start saying, well, you know, I mean, I start thinking about myself and things and thoughts I've had and stupid things I've done, you know, and that's without the fame. That's pretty big. Go just.
Who's the only one here who knows the illegal ninja moves from the government?
You know, a lot of people think that whole David over Goliath thing was basically an advance of technology. And it does kind of seem that way. But David knew that God's anointing, his Holy Spirit, in other words, God was with him. And when this giant was directly, you know, putting down God, he was basically cursing at God. He knew that he had the victory right there. See, he knew it going into it. So that's pretty cool. Confidence. Yes, he did, I guess.
I just love your station. Thank you so, so, so much.
The Sound of Life.
Let me just say that Brant and Sherry did this a couple nights ago. And, you know, they posted out on social media and things like that. And Brant's known for his songs, his original incredible songs. And this one kind of tops it all. And he just wrote this beautiful Christmas song, he said. I mean, like yesterday, which I think was the day before yesterday, because I got it yesterday. So he says, I think there's an awesome music video for it already. But let's give Brant and Sherry a Cup of Joe Morning Show welcome right here. This is my official Cup of Joe welcome. Brant insisted that it would minister to people for generations. And I'm playing for you because I think you are unique in that you may be the only one that appreciates it at this time of day. That 6:34 this morning. Just listen real close. We're going to start with Sherry asking a question, of course, as she always does, questioning Brant's sanity as he gets ready. And, you know, and really, what are you doing?
So you're going to sing the whole song?
Sing the song.
Interesting.
It'll go a little something like this. I got the old acoustic. It's called Christmas Trees Are Falling from the Sky.
What?
And this is going to be like a boys choir type song.
What does that even...
I'm going to go with something like this. Here we go. Hang on. Yeah.
Christmas trees are falling from the sky. All the TV stations wonder why.
What?
Now we all Christmas trees are falling from the sky.
Grant, what does this mean?
We're huddling in shelters, you and me. In a weird way, it's still kind of Christmassy. We're pouring through our sacred text so we can see.
Sacred text.
Sacred text, like the.
If there's any insight on this from prophecy, because Christmas trees are falling from the sky.
Wow.
No one saw this coming, but now
it's almost over. It's good though.
Great.
Wonder if Judgment Day is nigh.
Oh, wow.
Because Christmas trees are falling from. Christmas trees are falling from.
Yes, yes, yes.
Christmas trees are falling from the
Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Maybe in a Hallmark movie in the future.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
You're out there. You're in the world. You're in amongst it. You need to be a light. That is so vital and important. It's amazing how many people see you and you won't even realize it. And they don't come running up to you, you know, thank you so much, you know. But people know. People know by the way you talk nowadays. What's on your mind? How you act, how you take things that happen, you know? Man, oh man, it's just, you know that, right? Okay, just wanted to reaffirm that.
The right song at the right time. The Sound of Life.
So I was watching it last night. I found out what it is. It is an animated version, but it's done. It's technically called the motion capture animation. It's a technique that director Robert Zemeckis perfected, and it was used in the Polar Express. Then if you think about seeing the Polar Express, that's exactly what that's like, because you may not have seen the one that was on last night that Disney did. It's a Christmas Carol, and Jim Carrey's Ebenezer Scrooge, and of course he is visited. I mean, the storylines are just absolutely amazing, and I thought it was really the screenplay, in other words, the adaptation of Charles Dickens' real words were adapted very well. I thought they were done very well. And Marley, who was Scrooge's business partner, of course, for years, who had passed away like 7 years before. I love the way that starts. Marley was dead. The coroner had signed the papers. The officials had signed the papers. And Ebenezer Scrooge had signed the papers. Marley was dead as a doornail, in fact. I don't know how a doornail can be dead, but he was. And that fact must be perfectly understood, or nothing wonderful will come of this story I'm about to relate. Isn't that a great way to start a story? You're like, I gotta watch this. And of course, he sets up the cold Ebenezer Scrooge in his office, treating everybody with disdain and just away with you. I want to be left alone. And that was kind of his attitude. And he goes home at night eating his gruel. And it's cold out. A lot of snow in that. And every one of those, if you ever watch a Christmas Carol adaptation, there's no snow. Something's wrong with it. Because during Charles Dickens' boyhood, there was an unusual amount of snow in London. It hardly ever snows there. It's pretty interesting. And there was a lot of snow. Isn't that interesting? I love the way God works. I just see it, see? So Marley is visiting, and he's very scary. It really is. And he's obviously bound by chains and weights. And he said, I sowed these in my life, and I've come here to warn you. Now, I will say that biblically, that is not possible. That once you're there, we know that people there who've passed away cannot come back and warn you of things. But nevertheless, it made for a great story, and it was very powerful. And so he says, you know, I'm come here to warn you, Ebenezer, you know. And Ebenezer said, but you always were a good man of business, Jacob. Oh, I think he screams it out. Business! Humankind was my business! And it's pretty scary, because I remember Ebenezer falls to his knees. And the common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. I just love that. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Oh, why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down and never raise them to that blessed star which led the wise men to a poor abode? Were there no poor homes to which his light would have conducted me? Hear me, my time is nearly done. And Scrooge, in his typical replying, I will, Jacob, but don't be too hard on me. Okay, here he is in the middle of this apparition thing. It's really scary. Please don't be too hard on me. And that was one of my favorite parts of the thing. And then went on, and I fell asleep.
Dang.
Going to help you out here with something that Doug Hanna shared the other day. Doug Hanna coming up at 10, of course, with the Midday Cafe. And as he said, most of us have seen the Serenity Prayer. We may even know it by heart. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. But there is a full version of that. There's always a full version, right? Just a little bit more. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace, taking as Jesus or God did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. Trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him. Got a song here that you know by heart. You're going to love to sing it out. It was written in 1963 by a man named Edward Wiley, I guess, recorded and released that very same year by a man named Andy Williams. He put it on his Christmas album, and it was in his TV show. He's one of those guys that had a variety Christmas TV show there, you know, the week of Christmas, kind of, probably. And you can find it on the Andy Williams Christmas album. Now, the thing is, Andy Williams said, I had no idea it was going to be so big. You know, know, so popular, I just kind of like did it every year. And it's gotten to be really popular. The thing that's funny about it is, it's a song that, not, this isn't the funny part, it's a celebration and description of activities associated with the Christmas season, primarily focusing on get-togethers between friends and family. That's what you would write about in 1962, right? But among the activities included in the song is the telling of, and I quote, scary ghost stories. I guess that was a Victorian Christmas tradition. I mean, nowadays, it's, as they say, fallen into disuse. But that's one of the reasons that Charles Dickens, you know, in A Christmas Carol, which took place in the mid-1800s, that's when it was written, he based that whole story, Ebenezer Scrooge was affected for good by what? Ghosts, the spirits. It was kind of interesting. Well, I guess it's Friday morning. You may be thinking about your coffee. You know, let's face it. You get a little bit preoccupied with that if that's one of the things you've got to get done first thing in the morning. Well, wearing coffee cup holders apparently is a new thing. You may have seen this. Dunkin' unveiled a line of espresso-ware clothing. Now, I think you can probably tell right away, maybe, you never know nowadays, whether it's real or not. I was just checking out a couple of the clips. It's actually very clever. I mean, I love, what's my favorite is the American overalls. They're overalls with large coffee cup size pockets. The idea is you wear clothing that has pockets big enough to carry your coffee so you can have, be hands free. That's the whole thing. Now you're thinking, wait a minute, that's a great idea. They went a little bit too far with the latte, I don't even know how you say it, latte NK, the tank top with coffee storage pocket. But the thing is, they're not real. They're absolutely not available. They're going to spend their whole time telling about they're not available because they're not real. So I don't know if it's a good advertising thing or not. But
it's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
I was just so impressed by this. There's a couple of really powerful takeaways from this very simple little story. And I'm glad the lady let it out because, you know, you could have listened to the whole thing passed and moved on. Charlotte and Richard, young couple, got a couple of young kids. Thomas is 3 and Lily is 2. They're going out to eat, right? They're sitting there, enjoying their dinner and stuff. And a couple wanted to be moved. We want to be moved, removed from the presence of these children, please. And, you know, it really, now you may think, what's the big deal? You know, they're just old curmudgeons. Well, it was soul destroying, according to Charlotte. She said it was, you know, and that's the thing that you forget about. The things that when you are critical like that, it basically what you're saying is your entire parenting method is terrible. You know, you're a terrible, terrible parent. And, you know, moms have enough issues. They don't think they're very good parents to begin with. A study was done, an experiment. This is like one of the coolest things ever done by a soap company, really. Or, well, I guess they've gotten into other women's products and, you know, cosmetics and stuff. But it was really very cool. They told moms to rate themselves on a scale of 1 to 10. How would you rate yourself? Well, 5. I mean, you know, maybe a 6, 5.5. Okay. And then they asked their children who were in their teenage years, how would they rate their mom's parenting skills? 8, 9s. Really? The moms were in, they were bawling. They were just like, you're kidding me. Wow. It's incredible. So anyway, just to give you an idea, just put things into perspective. She said it was soul destroying and somebody saw the whole thing and thought enough to get a little something they could write a little note on and just penned the words, your children are beautiful and have far more to offer the world than the people who moved. X. That was it. And she said, you know what? It changed my whole life. It really did. It was a life jacket that stopped, you know, them from spiraling into doubt. It's pretty amazing. Very simple word. Very simple thing can cause you to go one way and start the doubt. It just, bam, creeps in. But yet a very simple couple of words start the other way around. It's very, very powerful. We are really, really fragile. And it's a good thing to remember.
There are two types of people in the world, and they both love the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
I want us to talk about something very mundane that turns out to be very powerful. Amy lives in a country that it's forbidden to preach the gospel. In fact, I can't even tell you where she is. That's why. She's a nurse who works in a big hospital. She cares for newborn babies. That's what she does. She is such a committed professional that her work actually stands out, so much so that many women are curious about her. See, this is what I keep trying to tell you. In our culture today, people are going to be curious because they know there's something different about you, and especially when you're in a country where there's not many people like you. And so they're moved actually to ask her questions in private. And that's when she kind of shares about her savior, Jesus, right? And because of her good work, some coworkers were envious and accused her of stealing some medicine. But it's interesting response. Her superiors actually didn't believe them, and the authorities eventually found the culprit. But because of who she was, they thought that can't be her. And the episode led some of her fellow nurses to ask about her faith. And it reminds you of what Peter says, of course, in the Bible. He said, "Dear friends, be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. Then even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior and they will give honor to God." Then interesting. How appropriate is that for today? "Father, help me to live in such a way that your name will be honored wherever I go." Amen. You know, your life really speaks louder than your words. And sometimes that can be a little scary.
And now,
things you didn't know from my dad.
Hey, Joe, happy Friday. How are you?
Wayne, I am good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well.
You got that Friday look on your face.
I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't have a mirror in front of me.
All right. Very nice.
Are you ready for your weekly music news, Joe?
I cannot wait.
All right. Well, listen, these are just some things that I noticed on my own while going through iTunes, but there's some new singles out that I wanted to let everyone know about because they're really awesome. We Are Messengers has a new song called Maybe It's Okay, So keep an ear out for that. Switchfoot has a song called Voices.
Yeah, I understand that's pretty good.
Yeah, Elevation Church. This is a Christmas song, so really go look for this one. Huh. It's called Here Comes Heaven.
Ooh.
And it's an awesome song.
Well, you may hear it on the Cup of Joe Morning Show. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
And Dan Bremnes has a song called Speak to Me. And my prediction is this is going to be a really big hit real soon.
Yeah, we heard that. That is pretty cool. He's a good guy. Pretty awesome.
Now, on the podcast, we're swinging you over to the podcast. We're doing our flashback music. And this week, you're going to hear an old song, 1992, by the Newsboys.
Ooh, all right. Loving that. Okay, there you go. You want to hear some old Newsboys? There it is, right there.
There it is. Come and check it out.
All right.
And last but not least for music news, just one final reminder from me anyway. Paul Beloche and Dave Pettigrew on December 6th, Goodwill Church, big Christmas show.
It's going to be awesome.
Now, Dave says it normally gets sold out. So if you haven't got tickets yet, I'd head over to Lighthouse Events and get your tickets now.
I think there's a few left, from what I understand, you know, but you never know by now. I mean, they may be gone.
Never know. So you snooze, you lose,
that's
as my
exactly
grandfather
right
used to say.
That's right.
Now, Joe, I got a couple questions for you here.
I knew this was coming.
Let's talk about Christmas music for a minute.
Okay.
We're a Christian radio station. That's what I was told when I started here.
Right.
And our mission is to spread the good news of Jesus.
Right.
So that's the whole point. So if a friend of the station were to ask, why do we play some songs that are considered secular holiday
good
songs?
Good question. Right.
What would be a good answer for them?
Well, first of all, our philosophy is to be like kind of a big house with a lot of rooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're a big open door. So we invite a lot of people to come in to it. You know,
that's
what I'm
room
saying?
At the table, right?
So one of the things that we do is mix in music that are favorites, like Bing Crosby music. I call them Bing Crosby favorites.
Yep.
These, I mean, are just childhood favorite songs. They're Christmas standards.
Everybody knows them.
They're really not a whole lot of them, if you look at it. And then we sprinkle in, those were sprinkled in, and then by far most of the songs that we're playing are by our artists that we play all year round. So, and I know for a fact, people have said, we've had people contact us and say, I was kind of switching stations around during a week before Christmas, you know, not feeling that great. And I landed on your station. I had no idea where I was. And I heard a really cool rendition of Little Drummer Boy. And I'm like, wow. So I kept listening. I said, you know, I kind of like this. So that's what our prayer is, that people will tune in and then keep listening, and especially keep listening after Christmas.
Yeah. And my understanding is that the secular music, we only play one or two an hour anyway, and then it's pretty much all Christian.
Pretty much.
Christian-based.
It can get a little more as we get closer to Christmas, you know.
Sure.
But I'm not thinking we're going to play, anything that you would hear on the commercial station.
Right.
You know, some of the things. Some of the things you do, some of the things you don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did it make any sense at all?
It made sense to me, Joe.
Okay. All right.
So here's another question. Is God able to use a Christian radio station that mixes in a few popular secular songs to introduce non-believers to the Christian message of Jesus, right?
Absolutely.
That's what we're talking about.
That's absolutely.
That's the whole point. It's kind of like a hook, you know.
Yep.
They're scrolling through. Yeah. They hear Bing Crosby. Oh, that's the hook. They stop, you know, and then they're going to hear something that's going to edify them.
Right.
You know?
I mean, we're not playing Santa got run over or Grandma got run over by a reindeer, which was big on the country station yeah. and things like that.
Well,
you know,
I haven't heard it yet.
So.
So, you know, we pray that God will use these songs to just bring people in right. and that they might stay tuned in and hear the true meaning of Christmas. And like we said, and all the other music that we hear.
Right, exactly. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that the music is not all, say, hymns, in other words. You know, you hear some right. things like the breakup song, for instance, some other songs that, you know, they're a little bit different.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of easy to listen to and fun to sing to and to kind of blend them in there.
And listen, when we talk about these things like Halloween and Christmas and all these holidays, I remind myself that, you know, Jesus met people where they were in their lives. You know,
that's true,
no matter where they were, no matter what their sins were, their right. circumstances. And I believe this is just another way to follow Jesus' lead.
Well, it is interesting because most of our holidays, or a lot of them, or a lot of the holidays, except for Thanksgiving, were built around old, you know, pagan holidays.
Yeah. I mean,
let's face it, before Jesus, besides the Jews, everybody was pagan.
That's so, right.
I mean, you know, we didn't know how to know God.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that happened there, and they were on the calendar. So, you know, the Christians came along in the early church and did the best they could. They said, well, let's try to redeem it. Let's, you know.
Exactly.
So that's a good thing. That's a good word to say. We're redeeming.
We're trying to redeem the holiday. That's right.
Right.
Yeah, perfect. Well, Joe, that's pretty much all I got for you.
Thank you.
The air here. But if you guys want to shoot on over to the podcast, you're going to hear me and Joe talk about a little bit more stuff.
How would I do that if I wanted to do that?
Well, there's a couple ways you can do
okay.
it. You could go to soundoflife.org mm-hmm. and kind of scroll down, and you'll see the icon for Joe's podcast.
I like that.
Or just any podcast aggregator that you use. If you're a podcast listener, just type in Cup of Joe Morning Show, and it's going to pop up at this point.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Right.
And it's getting really better since you're handling that. Thank you very much. Producer Wayne, you're the awesomest.
I'm trying.
Famous words and phrases from the Bible. Again, you laid this on me?
I got another one, Joe. You know, because I love these things.
I know.
It's one of those things that when I talk with people who are not believers in Jesus, you know, they're atheist or, you know, these are ways that I can point out to them and say, you know what? You say you don't believe and you may think that the Bible is irrelevant, but you say things. We all say things every day that come straight from the Bible
and they
just don't even realize it.
Very true.
So it's my duty to point these things out.
And you're going to lay one on me right
yeah.
now.
Right? Ready? Seek and ye shall find.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Jesus, Sermon on the Mount.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And people say that, or at least they used to.
See, I still hear it, yeah.
Sometimes they would even say the ye.
The ye, yeah. Yes.
Oh, the blind leading the blind. Absolutely true. Jesus was describing false teachers who insist they know the truth, but don't. And that may be one that you may think, is that from the Bible? The blind leading the blind. That's what he said. Yeah, see? That's a very common phrase.
Oh, yeah. Everybody says that today. Sure. And here's another one that's just equally as popular. An eye for an eye.
Right.
It first appeared in Leviticus 25. And rather than being a vindictive call for revenge, which some people think that it is, you know, it actually was put in there to limit the damage one person could do to another when they were taking retribution for something that happened to them.
Right, right. Exactly. You know? You lived in an age where they could stone you, so.
Yeah. So if someone came up and poked you, you know, you don't want to go lop off their hand. That's overboard.
Admittedly, times were tough. Yeah. They really were. It's, thank you, Jesus. The writings on the wall. Oh, I know this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good
Daniel,
one.
Daniel, yeah. A hand appeared and wrote a mysterious message on the wall to King King Belshazzar. That's who it was.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've got my kings. The message was from God, who had weighed Belshazzar on an eternal scale and found him in contempt, and his kingdom was taken on that very night.
Yeah,
this
that's
has
right.
led to our use of the phrase as something inevitable that we can all see happening in the near future.
In the near future.
The writings on the wall.
That's it. That's a word. That's a cautionary tale. That's a funny story. That's it's an odd story in the Bible, but it's a cautionary tale. The writing is on the wall.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yep. And we reap what we sow.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's generally that's accepted as cultural wisdom. That means you get what you earn.
Right. Right.
But the phrase is actually lifted from Paul's letter in Galatians chapter 6, verse 7.
And it's interesting because I was using that the other day because Christmas tree prices are supposed to be through the roof this year.
Oh.
And it's 10 years old. In other words, it's something that happened 10 years ago when the trees were very young. And so a lot of tree growers went out of business, and the price was very low. So now there's not many tree growers, and the price goes way up because of the supply and the demand. But I'm saying, you know, man, it took 10 years to be able to reap what was sown. So I think, you know, not always necessarily in this season.
You even think about it. The Christmas tree business is a long-term, right? That's a long-term business you're getting into.
A lot of things.
Turnover to grow those trees back up to 5 or 6 feet tall or whatever.
A lot of fruit farmers and things that can tell you exactly that's the truth.
Crazy. Yep,
absolutely.
Yep. And Joe, you got one last one for us?
The straight and narrow. Yes, following the smallest traveled path leads to the narrow gate of life. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus cautioned his followers against following the more glamorous, broad, and well-traveled path that led to a wide gate full of destruction. Painting quite a picture there.
Yeah, I would say that to, you know, when I was younger, to my more wild friends in the group of, we had like 12 best friends. Someone had nicknamed us the Dirty Dozen. I think after the war movie for some reason. This happened to be 12 of us who were best friends.
Misfits, you were.
And I have to say, you know, when you're in your 20s, you're not all going down the straight and narrow path at that point.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah. Usually.
That's right.
It took me a little longer to grow up, you know.
Some of them
still haven't grown up. I'm not going to name any names, but.
No.
Well, that's all we got today, Joe.
That's pretty good.
All right. Thanks
Wrapping
for tuning
up
in.
Podcast. Put some good music on there.
Amen.
All right.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life, Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events and contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.